And it's a cold heart open to the cold heart truth. Emil Guillermo on AMOK.com, and we're here with Debbie Louie. And I mispronounced your last, your Filipino name.
Panganiban.
Panganiban.
That's how I pronounce it. Other people might say Panganiban, but I've been in America for a long time. It's Panganiban.
And you were a student back in 1976.
Yes, doing 72 through 76.
You know, at the same time, I was over at Harvard trying to figure out where am I going to get information on Filipino Americans, because there were no books, there was nothing, and you had the primary source right there in your seminar.
Right. Well, at UC Santa Cruz, you have a senior thesis project, and so since it was my last year, I needed to develop something. So my plan was to be a teacher. And as fate would have it, I met another teacher who was from Stockton. So he encouraged me to come to Stockton, and he would introduce me. So he did. So I came to Stockton on a Greyhound bus, and I got off, and then he took me downtown. They had Bayanihan. There was a strong Filipino community, and I got introduced to Alma Acala, Jose Bernardo, a bunch of other people. And through my contacts with Jose Bernardo, he hired me to do the Pacific Asian Coalition Conference that fall. And then Alma and I became friends, and then I hired her to be a consultant for the class. And then Evelyn Kasuga was a fellow student, and so I asked her to join me. So the three of us were co-conspirators or co-collaborators for this student-directed seminar that we offered in spring of 1976.
And there was no Asian American studies, no ethnic studies at Santa Cruz, and everyone thinks of Santa Cruz as this rabble-rousing kind of place, but not like San Francisco State, apparently.
Well, this was still in the early days. You know, 76 is still pretty early. And so what I was inspired by was, I think it was maybe 2 years before, some Asian American students offered an Asian American history seminar as well. They did a student-directed seminar. And they didn't have guest speakers, but they talked about the issues, Asian American history. So I took that class and made great friends with some of those people. We did have a protest, and we did chain the doors, and then they did take one of the professors at Santa Cruz to offer an Asian American history class the following quarter, which I took, and I found it to be good, but I still felt we were lacking because I'm Filipino, and I appreciated learning Asian American history, the general part, especially the contributions of Chinese and Japanese, but I needed to know more about Filipino, so that's where the genesis of my idea was to do my own student-directed seminar in Filipino American history.
And so here you have Larry Itleong coming to speak to 20 UC Santa Cruz students, and he's really, now that history is recognizing him, he's the icon in, you know, Filipino American labor history. What was it like to have him come in? You heard parts of the tape again today, and he said some pretty very straightforward, direct things. What was the reaction from the students?
I think we appreciated his straightforwardness. I think we all, being Filipino, most of us were all Filipino. We had some that were immigrants, they had just come from the Philippines, some that were born in America, some like me that are like 1.5, born in the Philippines but raised in the United States. So we came from all different backgrounds, all different types of Filipino dialects, but we could understand him on that level, and I think we all accepted where he was coming from and respected him. You could see just from his hands, you knew he worked hard all his life, and when he talked about life being a struggle, you knew what he meant. Like, not the struggles that we go through every day. Oh, am I going to go to class or am I not going to class? This man really had to struggle to eke out a living, and to have the courage to organize his fellow workers to demand equal treatment and justice, that took a lot. And so we all respected him for what he had to offer us.
Now, he came to speak to your class a year before he died. This is 1976. He died in 77. He died of Lou Gehrig's disease. Did he seem sick or ill?
Well, you know, he was only, from what I remember, I think he was 63 years old. So to us, being 20-something, that seems like ancient history. But, like, I'm 59 years old now, and that means he's only, like, a few years older than I am now. And I feel very young. But remembering him now, he looked a lot older than 63 years old. And perhaps that's all of those years of working in the fields, backbreaking labor, you know, not having all of the nice things in life. It was tough. And if he was ill, he did not indicate that he was ill.
He was called Larry Seven Fingers because he lost some fingers in the canning accident.
Yeah.
And what does he described his fingers during the symposium and his hands? Do you recall which digits were missing or how what his hands looked like?
I can't remember. I mean, I can't remember. I just remember he had a cane, so he always had folded his hands across the top of the cane. And I seem to think it might have been the... I really can't remember. I'd be guessing now, Emil. I don't want to be wrong.
Well, I was just curious because you said he had long, gnarly hands.
Yes, I remember his hands very well. They were, you could tell they were, all of the joints were really swollen, but the fingers were really long. And, you just knew that man worked hard. You just knew.
When he talked about the things that he talked about on the tape, talked about standing up for your rights, and no one's going to give it to you. You got to go out there and demand it. How did that resonate with the students?
The students, we were intimidated. We were in awe, but I think we accepted that's how we should be. Because obviously, you know, he was a union organizer and he had had some success organizing. In fact, that's one of the things that they talked about when they introduced him, was that he, you know, led the Salinas, he helped organize the Salinas lettuce strike, which was one of the first successful strikes they had, and that he had also been a part of the Delano grape boycott. And so we knew that he knew what he was talking about. And so we accepted what he had to say as of having value.
Did it ever strike you as odd that, wow, we know more about Chavez, and Chavez is more revered, but Ed Leong, even though he played a role, was kind of left out? Did that ever bother you, or did it occur to you?
Well, I don't know if it ever bothered me. I think you're annoyed. You're like, well, wait a minute, that's not all true. It wasn't all him. We were there, too. We're a part of that. How come we're not mentioned?
Filipinos.
Sure, yeah. How come Filipinos aren't mentioned? So I guess you could say yes. It does bother us. And here we are 37 years later, and we still remember it as if it was yesterday. So, yes, it's definitely a gross omission in history. And now that people are talking about it, you know, because it's getting close to like 40-year mark now, we want to see some justice being given to Larry Eat Leong, and we want to have him take his rightful place in American history.
Now, there's a lot of people who say that, you know, back then, I mean, this came out of the symposium, that back then there was there were more uncritical looks at Chavez. And so that made Chavez into a saint, and everyone else under him just did not compare. Do you think that was the case, and one of the reasons why Ed Leong may have been overlooked, because he seemed to have been a co-equal throughout the labor movement, and then was overshadowed?
Well, he comes across as being a really tough guy. And he's a pretty straight shooter. He tells you what he thinks, and he expects you to tell him what you think. He doesn't like this nicey-nicey stuff. And I think at his core, he's a union man. And, you know, unions, they're about, like, fighting for what's right. They take the position that nobody's going to give me anything because I say please and thank you. They're only going to give it to me because I make them see that you have to. You want something from me, then you've got to give me something for it in return. You know, and he mentions that in the tape. You know, if you want higher wages, you know, you have to stand up and fight for them. If you look at the history of unions, you know that they, the ones that put in the eight-hour working day, the breaks for every hour you work, you get a 15-minute break. They didn't have any of these things if not for the union. So to understand Larry, you have to understand that that's how union people are. They're not always pretty. He talks about being pretty, but we know he probably wasn't always pretty depending if he was negotiating with the employers.
Yeah, he was tough. He said he could be a mean SOB. He could be, did he come across, well, he was sort of gentle toward the students.
Yes, he came off as very grandfatherly, the wise man on the stage, really the person who was looking back on his life and had, he didn't go into great detail about all the conflicts that he had seen and how he got success, but he was really telling us what he felt was the most important thing, which is how we have to be, you know, be able to speak up, take your education seriously, have a goal, have ambition, and work together.
There was also a message about justice. He talked about the kind of injustices that occurred toward Filipinos.
Sure. Yeah, he does, because he experienced them himself, and he talks about, you know, getting arrested, and he wasn't guilty, but the only way he saw that he was going to get out of it was to plead guilty. But, you know, he did see a lot of injustice in his life, and it's also very well documented, a lot of the injustices that were perpetrated on the Filipinos in the 30s and 40s.
Now, as you recount all this history and that day when he came into the class, I can see you get kind of emotional about it.
Oh, sure. It's like as if it was yesterday, I think, you know, so very meaningful.
But the emotion, it strikes you because?
Well, maybe because it changed me too. That having that awareness, having someone tell you what you know you need to do.
How about just the fact that it's now been 37 years, we're still talking about it, and there's still so much to be done?
Well, maybe that's it too, and I'm just not thinking that way, but sure, you would think after 37 years, we would have accomplished a lot more than what we have already, and that's kind of sad.
I mean, I'm looking at you, and I see that you're really kind of, you're emotional. No, you don't have to be sorry. It's just, that was the power of that meeting.
It really was. Yeah, just thinking about it, hearing his voice, and how passionate he was in what he believed in.
You know, what's funny is that now people are becoming more critical of Chavez, and as that's happening, it seems that it's removed a lot of the barriers that enable people now to see Larry Itliong. And now, warts and all, he's being now slowly but surely being remembered. That must make you feel a little better.
Oh, it makes me feel a lot better, sure. I hope he does get his due recognition. I do think he was a hero. I do believe that he was fully committed to to doing something for our Filipino people. I really do.
And going forward, now we have AB 123 in California that says in high school or middle school and high school, their kids are going to have to learn about the Filipino-American role in farm worker history or in the history of California. That must please you since you work in the education system.
Well, that's going to be really, really great because we have such a large Filipino-American population, not only in California, but in the United States. And that's just going to be really great because it's going to make us feel even more proud, if we're not proud already, of our heritage, of being Filipino, that we're here not just existing, but we've made a difference. We've contributed something of value to our society. And so if that helps all our generations, the future generations of Filipino Americans to feel good about themselves, to feel confident so that they can go on and create their own destiny, then it's well worth it.
Well, I see it's very emotional for you. And I really appreciate you sharing the tapes and for having the presence of mind to record them. And I thank you, Debbie Louie of San Joaquin Delta College. Emil Guillermo on AMOK.com.